Prepare yourself
for a talk radio
experience
like no other.
Strap yourselves in and hold on.
He stands for truth. He stands for justice. He stands for what's right. This is the Alex Jones Show. Call Alex now, toll free, at 877-590-5525. Now live from Austin, Texas, here's Alex Jones.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, on this Sunday afternoon. I'm glad that you've decided to spend some time with us as we get closer here to Christmas. I will be live next Christmas Eve, next Sunday, here in studio, so I hope you will join us as we defend the Republic, as we expose corruption, and occasionally get into history and movies as well. You know, I know the Gibson family had a chance, to meet quite a bit of the family, and from afar have admired Mel Gibson's films. I like The Passion of the Christ. I like him way back in Road Warrior, which he didn't make, but he was the star of. And I went and saw Apocalypto, and it was shot in high definition. I talked about it last week. Just absolutely amazing. The cinematic experience really put me there. And I'd read a few books about the overall Mayan culture and then about the Aztecs. And I'd been to some of the pyramids. My mom had taken some of that stuff in college, so I guess that's why the books were laying around, and I'd read them. And so, being a novice, I guess I knew more than the general public. So I knew that down there they did have human sacrifices, depending on which tribe it was. The Aztecs killing thousands, and then other tribes in parts of history at the same time killing less. And then I saw a story in The Statesman really attacking Mel Gibson. Like, he's trying to make them all look like a bunch of barbarous killers, and, he makes them look bad. And there was this UT assistant professor who made some interesting statements. In fact, I have them here in a story we put together. She said that the Ausmerger Statesman story excused human sacrifice as valid, a pious act, and done with solemnity. And regardless of how you view human sacrifice, I think Mel Gibson's allowed to make a movie about it and depict it. And people are always wanting attention to Mesoamerica. This is what, the second big movie that's ever been made about it. And it's been number one at the box office for 2 weeks, so I think it's an important subject. And just vicious attacks on Mel Gibson, saying, he's attacked the Jews, now he's going after the Mayan. And I don't think that's what Mel Gibson was really trying to do here. I think he was trying to make an action-adventure, this action-adventure movie. But joining us in studio for the rest of the hour is a lady who worked prominently on the film, and she's Barbara McLeod, and she is an academic PhD in anthropology from the University of Texas, 1990, specializing in Mayan languages and hieroglyphic writing, and she can speak the Mayan language and is one of the leading experts on it, and was hired to work on the film, work closely with Mel Gibson. And I was pleased last Tuesday, or was it Wednesday, I got an email from her to our website, in a defense of Mel Gibson, talking about some of the things that aren't accurate, some of the things that are accurate, and, talking about, certainly there was violence going on with the Mayan and the Aztecs. But enough of that. She is in studio with us. Thank you for coming in.
Having me, Alex. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. Tell us just a little bit about yourself. You're also a pretty interesting person, not just studying this. You also are a stunt flyer, stunt pilot.
I am, uh-huh.
That's where the planes go spinning down towards the ground?
Right, yes, I do. I specialize in teaching basic aerobatics and spin training, and I'm based out at Bergstrom, and I've been a flying instructor for coming up on 9 years now.
Well, I've got to come out sometime and see you do the aerobatics. That's a whole other radio interview.
I'll tell you exactly where to park if you want to watch.
I was reading on one side about you flying. It was, you've done 52 or 54 continual spins.
I did one spin with 52 and a half turns, and I've just recently had it digitized, so I could send it to you and you could run it if you want to. Put it up on.
So that's FFTV. Quite a few. I mean, that's when planes that dive bomb down, going yeah, 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 yeah.
It's something most pilots wouldn't think of doing. And I always like to tell people I did it in my reckless youth back in 1995.
Wow, amazing. Listen, you're impressive. How did you get into anthropology, just in a nutshell, and then how did you find yourself working on Apocalypto?
Well, in a nutshell, I grew up in Missouri. I was very interested in cave exploring as a junior high school student and started getting really active in caving all the way through high school and all on into college.
Spelunking or?
Well, cavers call it caving. You know, other people call it spelunking.
Gotcha,
in any case,
gotcha.
I mean, long story short, this led me to Belize, where there are lots and lots of caves, and at the time I went there in the early 70s, they were largely unexplored.
You can go through those on the inner tubes.
Some of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of them. As a matter of fact, I'm the person who pioneered that cave that's now a big tourist
really?
Cave.
Really? Wow, I'm going to be
right.
going through that here soon.
I'll tell you all about it. Ian Anderson's a friend of mine, and actually
wow.
I'm one of the very first people that ever went through there.
That's amazing.
And I was part of the party that first pioneered.
So you're into caving. And
into caving, and the caves are full of Maya artifacts.
Wow.
And not just any old Maya artifacts, not just pots lying around, although you have this. But when you think about what these artifacts are telling us, it looks like it's a collection of sacred water. That's why they put these pots under dripping stalactites. And there's a sacrificial complex that we're still trying to understand. But I think they may have marched sacrificial victims down into the caves and then, in a ritual context, dispatched them and often decapitated them. I've found, I've been the first person to find this stuff. I found walled-off corners of cavern chambers with piles and piles of skulls all covered over with flowstone. In closer examination, you find the first vertebra indicating that it was decapitation, and then you find headless bodies lying around in the rest of the cave. So there's a large sacrificial complex that took place in caves.
Now, we know that those cultures, I've read this, you're the expert, they also would bound women and children and throw them into cenotes. Wasn't that a form of sacrifice?
Well, it was, yeah. There were times when they did make offerings of women and children, but generally speaking, it was males, and generally speaking, it was, at least from the picture they tell us,
warriors.
It was warriors. It was, you know, it was captives taken on the battlefield for the most part. But toward the end of the classic period, and we're talking about 750 to 800 AD, somewhere in there, there was wide-scale warfare among the Maya. And in that case, it wasn't, I don't think it was simple ritual warfare. It was competition for vital resources, which is land, water, and labor. And so they were at each other's throats. You see lots and lots of evidence of very quickly installed fortifications, and just general evidence of destruction of buildings.
Were these different kings escalating the sacrificing as a way to also intimidate their rivals?
Well, there's no clear evidence that they were escalating the sacrificing, at least nowhere near on the scale that you see in Apocalypto. In Apocalypto, the story that we're being told is that they're escalating the sacrificing because they're being beset by drought and several kinds of plagues. And I can't provide any archaeological evidence for this kind of thing. But it's clear that they made sacrifices about both animals and humans to propitiate the gods, to have favorable weather, and to have the gods' support in warfare.
Now, in the movie, they bend the people over kind of like a round pole. But then I've seen these chalk mules, the person sitting...
Right.
With their knees up on their elbows, and then the tour guides were saying that that's where they bent them over and cut their hearts out. What would the difference be in those different sacrificial altars?
Well, the sacrificial altars that they bent them over, I mean, there's archaeological evidence of that. It's probably very much like what you see depicted in the movie. In fact, there are Maya monuments that show sacrificial victims lying on their backs, draped dead, over these monuments with a heart sitting right on top of the chest, indicating that it's just been excised. And it's a central theme on a Maya monument. And there are, in archaeological context, stones that appear to have been used for this. The chacmools are thought to be receptacles for hearts after they were extracted.
Ah.
So they didn't use them to actually support the victim during the event. They would... because they've got this little shallow bowl in them that they would place the hearts. Yep. We don't know for sure. I mean, we don't have any observers from that time.
I read the Mexican flag isn't really an eagle grabbing a snake and some cactus, but grabbing hearts, and that goes back to Aztec symbols. Is that accurate?
It does, yeah, although, you know, it's kind of a recent myth, the whole story of how the Aztecs founded their homeland. You know, it's that symbol on the flag is really grown out of a lot of, I think, misconstruction or
Aslan.
Well, it's the symbol itself of Aslan, and I don't really want to get into the whole idea of Aslan. I'd like to stay on.
Yeah, let's get into Apocalypto. Yeah, let's talk about Apocalypto. We'll be back in just 3 minutes. and we'll go straight into it. Stay with us.
Right.
Are you concerned about the high cost of prescription drugs? Since January of 2006, RxDrugCard.com members have saved an average of $33 per prescription filled. That's over 46% savings. The average savings for generic drugs was over 71%. RxDrugCard.com is the only major discount prescription drug plan that offers a price lookup page, so you can get an idea of your discounted price before you enroll. RxDrugCard.com is for anyone who pays for their own prescriptions. There are no age restrictions, all prescriptions are covered, and 95% of all pharmacies in the U.S. participate, including Walmart, Walgreens, CVS Pharmacy, and many more. With RxDrugCard.com, you will save immediately with no messy forms or paperwork. Membership fees start at only $4.50 per month and include a 30-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Visit us at www.rxdrugcard.com or call us at 888-216-2461. That's 888-216-2461. Do it today.
Ted Anderson from Midas, December 22nd, 2006. Gold 619. Ounce gold coins are at 639.64, 322.37 for half, 161.19 for a quarter ounce coins. That's 639.64, 322.37. 161.19. 1971, Nixon closes the gold window. Fiat currency. 1920s, the German mark explodes from 75 to 23 trillion. 1995, gold doubles against the Mexican peso. 1997, gold increases 82% over the Indonesian rupee. 1998, gold jumps two-thirds over the Russian ruble. 2002, the Argentine peso loses a fifth of its value to gold. 2006, the last superpower, the USA's mighty dollar, loses over half to gold and other raw goods. Could government let this happen? Without immediate backing, how much will it lose? Midas has Nick Barashev's report covering the loss of purchasing power, fat tail events, bull market economic vulnerabilities, and gold-oil relationship. You've lost half of your purchasing power. Call 800-686-2237 before the rest disappears. That's 800-686-2237.
Year after a year in production and traveling to distant lands, my new film Terror Storm is complete. Shocking declassified government documents prove that Western governments are orchestrating terror attacks against their own populations as a pretext to enslave them. Terror Storm proves that not only was 9/11 an inside job, but the attacks of 7/7 in London were carried out by British intelligence. Terror Storm chronicles the lies that took us to war in Iraq, a White House program to disseminate fake news, NSA spying, secret police torture, the latest 9/11 information, and much, much more. Terror Storm is the definitive guide to the history of government-sponsored terrorism. It's an anthology of government crimes. Terror Storm is a film that everyone who wants to be truly informed must see. Get your copy today at InfoWars.com or PrisonPlanet.com or by calling toll-free 1-888-253-3139 or watch it right now online at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Attention, attention everyone! A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse, or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and makes a great stocking stuffer. Honest, WristEase provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, W-R-I-S-T-E-A-S-E, WristEase.com. Once again, WristEase.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
This is the Alex Jones Show.
All right. Apocalypto. The Mayanist, or whatever you want to call them, the local Aztec groups, they like to say that there either wasn't human sacrifice going on, or if it was extremely limited, that was loving and sweet and wasn't bad. And my question is skinning people, is cutting their hearts out, is ritual torture loving and good, and are we worthy to talk about it? I mean, that's kind of the attitude, like, oh, it's so wonderful and good, you're not really even, you're not worthy. I've got an email, you're not even worthy to discuss it. So we're talking to a really serious academic and researcher. She's got a PhD in anthropology, and she's Barbara McLeod. She worked big time on the film, number one in the country, second week in a row, Apocalypto. Let's jump right into it. You've got the floor. Let's run down what really happened and you know, what's real in the film, what isn't, what's used for part of the story. Got to condense it down to 2 hours.
Okay, well, I mean, starting off with a little bit of the science. The eclipse happens way faster than a real eclipse would happen. You see the scene in the movie of the shadow of the moon moving across the sun much faster than that would ever take place. The following night, you see a full moon rising, which would also never happen because eclipses take place at conjunction, the dark of the moon. So
she can nitpick things like that all day.
Well, but a lot of other people can, too. But I don't use it as evidence.
Well,
that,
I mean, I'm not saying you're nitpicking.
Yeah.
I'm saying they nitpick. Yeah,
yeah, well, but just suspend disbelief. You know, it's done as a poetic device. It's visual poetry. Let it happen. It's also, it's a necessary collapsing of time because the movie is already 2.5 hours long. They were scrambling to find ways to make it shorter.
It should be 31 to have the whole moon cycle.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you're going to tell the whole story of the ancient Maya, you know, especially if you're going to try to do it and placate the people who want all of their positive accomplishments given equal time, you'd have a 10-hour movie. And there's no way, you know, you can't put that out there.
Well,
you can't sell that to the American
here's
people.
Here's my question. Why do these people have a problem with the film if, you know, it didn't show ritual skinning or tying people up in a ball and rolling them down the steps? I mean, it didn't show ripping the jaws off, as you mentioned in your email.
Well, I think it's because it did show a level of violence that the Maya were not, as far as we know, engaged in, but the Aztec were, at least from the reports of Bernal Diaz del Castillo, who is a main chronicler of the conquest of Central Mexico. He reported in great detail that the Aztecs did things like that in vast numbers of people, or two vast numbers of people.
Yeah, he was saying 20,000, but people are now estimating it was probably thousands.
Well, we don't know. I mean, yeah, I see it just kind of gets reduced down to smaller numbers. But in any case, it was still a very large-scale sacrifice. We don't have any evidence that the Maya did that kind of thing. But as far as whether the Maya did public human sacrifice, I think we have every bit of evidence to suggest.
Well, it's carved all over their temples.
It was spectacle. It was a spectacle. Sometimes it was private, but sometimes it was public. And I don't think there's any excuse for sanitizing it. I think
the Romans did ritualized sacrifice. It was just done in a more of sporting way, out there in the arena. I mean,
right.
If that isn't human sacrifice, I don't know what is, letting lions tear up women and children. I mean,
we who are about to die salute you, right?
Yeah. Well, it starts with the gladiators, but by the time they were done, yeah, bears and elephants running around and running over people and burning them and just and nuts.
Well, I would say, and the crowd apparently went nuts from everything we know about that phase of history. I really think that our species has, on some deep down level, a fascination with this kind of thing. We have a fascination with death. We have a fascination with blood and gore. And I think we need to find some way to channel that in a positive way. We can't deny it.
And we are predators.
We are predators. That's right. You know, and other primates eat meat. You know, we thought for a long time chimpanzees only, you know, pluck leaves off trees and fruit and so on. But they eat meat.
No, they kill other animals, even rocks.
That's right. They do. So we do have a bloodlust issue somewhere deep down. And a lot of human culture has been focused on containing that or channeling it. And it gets channeled in a warfare. That's where it mostly goes. Or occasionally it gets channeled into religion. And a lot of ancient peoples and some modern peoples have rites of animal sacrifice or human sacrifice. And I think that in one of the burdens upon us, or at least one of the directives that we have to address, is how do we spiritualize that? How do we get past that primeval bloodlust? How do we channel it into something that is worthwhile and loving and good? And
now, you work closely with Mel on the film. Tell us.
I did.
Tell us about that process.
Well, he was a fascinating guy to watch. There was one week where we had something like 10 to 12 hour days, and he was there almost all the time. And he is on top of every nuance of that film. And he's a guy that just doesn't seem to be able to sit still. if he wasn't, he'd sit down for about 15 seconds, then he'd be up and walking all around. And, you know, when we weren't actually engaged in the ADR in the sound studio, which is, you know, there's a very sensitive set of microphones, and the actors are up there at the microphones, and they've got cues to overdub what they see on the screen with the lines.
And you're there trying to make sure it's as accurate as possible.
I'm there to help them make it as accurate as possible, to correct any errors that may have been in the original script, and also to add off-camera lines. And I was working with a young man named Nicolas Pott, and it's important to acknowledge him. He's a native speaker who lives in Los Angeles, but he doesn't speak much English at all. And so I kind of helped build a bridge. He and I were conferring constantly about the best way to say something. And so we really were a team in this project. And there were times when we were up on the computer upstairs, you know, writing dialogue as well, which then they could choose from in some of their off-camera lines. But Mel is just, I mean, I'm really impressed with him as a director. He's on top of every emotional nuance of that film. Everything you see in there has passed muster with him. And especially the character development. And I think the character development in this film is just absolutely superb. Both the good guys and the bad guys, you really care about them.
And exactly, especially Jaguar Paw, and then you got the head warrior guy that's chasing him.
Zero Wolf, right? Zero Wolf for the guys with the he's got human skulls hanging off under his own chin and hanging off his shoulders. You know, I mean, that's fairly realistic because the ancient Maya did sometimes decorate themselves with human skulls and human hands, skinned hands, stuffed and, you know, hung in little garlands around their neck. I mean, there's a lot of evidence of this kind of thing. So I think one of the most powerful things about Apocalypto is the compassion that the audience just has to feel for Jaguar Paw and his community.
Well, and I do feel compassion for him, and I mean, it was so... some have likened it to watching some anthropology, you know, film on the Discovery Channel. I mean, that was so realistic. Just from what I've seen, you know, in footage of people in Brazil and places.
Sure. Now, it was not quite realistic in the sense that during the period just before the Spanish arrived, most of the people who were not actually in the urban centers were still attached to, affiliated with, and engaged in trade, commerce, and paying tribute.
So there weren't that many people who were living in purely tribal bands.
No, but there could have been some. There could have been, you know, in remote areas, there could have been people who were out, just totally isolated. I wouldn't deny that.
But from what I've read, though, the Aztecs, I mean, we're talking about the Aztecs now, would march out you know, to get captives for sacrifice.
Well, then the Mayas did it, too. But the Mayas, from their own stories that they tell us, suggests that it was done primarily in a battlefield context, where they go out and meet warriors from other cities, and
We're going to break again. We've got plenty of time on the other side to get through. You've got some neat stuff. You're going to actually speak in Mayan here on the air, or I guess a different derivation, a more ancient form of it. When we get back, stay with us.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
Times are tough right now, but there are a lot of different ways to get ourselves out of this mess. Providing for our own food, water, and power are a good start. As you may have heard by now, Ken Solar has been configuring alternative energy packages for over a decade. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar-powered generator. For a lot less than you'd expect, this portable system can chop up nearly a third of your electric bill. Getting yourself onto solar power is one of the most liberating things you can do for yourself and your family. The solar-powered generator will run your lights, fan, electric blanket, your refrigerator, and a whole slew of household items. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos and how-tos, and, of course, the new solar-powered generator. Enter the GCN coupon code during your order and save an additional 10%. Get a solar-powered generator now from kensolar.com. That's kensolar.com.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS or to the state? You are not alone. Nationwide Tax Relief is here, and we can get you a fresh start. I'm Richard Boggs, founder and CEO of one of the largest tax resolution firms in the country. If you're suffering from wage garnishments, bank levies, an audit, or unfiled tax returns, my staff of expert tax attorneys will step in, step up, and settle your tax debt. Do not fall for the scams that promise everyone some fast, pennies on the dollar compromise. If you owe more than $20,000 in any IRS or state taxes, you've got a serious tax problem. So get serious. Call Nationwide Tax Relief. We're honest and we'll treat you like family. Call us for your free confidential consultation. Again, you're not alone. You've got Nationwide.
Call Nationwide Tax Relief today at 1-800-958-2677. That's 1-800-958-2677.
Hey folks, Alex Jones here with an important question. When was the last time you used Pure Soap? I mean the hard to find kind that's all natural and not full of corrosive toxins and chemicals and detergents that just dry out your skin and have been connected to very serious health problems. Let me tell you something about the Calbin Pure Soap Company. There's 100% unconditional guarantee on all their wonderful products. They're all natural, they're triple concentrated, they're factory direct, factory owned, and operated since 1947. Earth-friendly Pure soaps for bathing, laundry, and kitchen. Try Pure Soap once and I'll guarantee you'll never use anything else. Now for the first time, Calbin Pure Soap is available factory direct to you and your family. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Call today for a Calbin Soap catalog at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091 or on the web at calbinpuresoap.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Raging for the truth, exposing corruption, dismantling the false left-right paradigm. He's Alex Jones.
Welcome back, my friends. We're here today talking with Barbara McLeod, Ph.D., and she's in studio with us. She worked intimately on the film Apocalypto with the director, Mel Gibson. I mean, he obviously cared in every other movie that just even mentions the Aztecs or the Mayans or that old Mesoamerican culture. It would be in English. They'd probably even have English accents. And, I mean, he attempts to really immerse you with the original language. He went and hired you, to try to make sure it was really accurate. There's so much to talk about. I'd have to interview you during the weekday show if we were talking during the break, maybe Thursday. But let's now try to condense all the key areas we haven't covered yet. During the break, you were making a point about how he's basically collapsing these different cultures that were, had some of the same foundations and history into 2.5 hours. I mean, mm-hmm. You have to do that.
You have to do that. I mean, as a storyteller, and you're trying to set a backdrop of a vast culture that spanned thousands of years, you have no choice. You're going to have to collapse time, and you're going to have to make a kind of cultural mosaic. Either that, or you set your story completely accurately within one small time frame. And, he chose, as a narrator, to create characters that are larger than life and a backdrop that was spectacular visually, and it is. It's sumptuous visually. And he did it by collapsing a little bit of the pre-classic Maya culture into a chunk of the classic culture into a chunk of the post-classic culture and created something which didn't exist. As far as we know, we have no evidence that it was anything like that. But it was made up of pieces that were accurate. And it was not done in ignorance. It was done absolutely deliberately.
Well, I am a buff on the Revolutionary War, and I went and saw The Patriot. It's extremely accurate in many areas. In other areas, it is a mosaic. In fact, he took three different, or the writers of that, took three different historical figures there in that area of the Carolinas and kind of put them together, because in 2 hours you've got to. You can't go show every character, everything that happened. But it was all based on real things that happened.
Mm-hmm. I think that the objection that arises about Apocalypto versus the Patriot are other things, like I mentioned in my email, the firm, which creates a rather distorted view of the legal profession in the United States, is that we assume that most of the audience, when they see a film like The Patriot or the Firm, know a little bit more about the background, the real background, and so they can contextualize what they see as a cultural mosaic or a mosaic of the sort you mentioned. Whereas a lot of people that see this film, Apocalypto, don't know anything about the Maya. And so the objection, which I don't share, is that the first time that people who are naive and innocent about the Maya see something about the Maya, then they should get something that's fair and balanced. It should be culturally accurate. It should be historically accurate. And I say, well, why should it be? It's a work of fiction. It's not presented as a work of history.
You call them Mayas? I mean, who are the groups that just think they're the best things in sliced bread, and that you can almost worship the whole Mayan system, and they get these other academics who get really mad and almost act like...
Well,
that you're not even holy enough, I don't know about myself, to even try to discuss it.
Well, first of all, a lot of these people are my friends. I've been in the field long enough that I know an awful lot of people in the field. And they aren't monolithic in their views about Apocalypto. I mean, looking at the debate that went on this online list that I mentioned to you during the break, there are a lot of diverse views, and there are some that support, as I do, Mel Gibson's right to tell a story and to use whatever narrative devices he chooses to tell that story. As you mentioned at the beginning of the show, the core purpose, the core premise of the story is an action adventure with a foot chase in it. That's what it was conceived as originally, before the Maya were even part of it. That was the story he
wanted
to tell.
In fact, it was going to be more of a central or northern North America, right?
That's right. It was going to be more of northern North America, and I'm not quite sure what led him to the Maya, but when he did decide on the Maya, then he recruited Richard Hansen, who is a Maya archaeologist living in, he's affiliated with a project in Washington, D.C. He works for long periods of the year in Guatemala, and he's tremendously knowledgeable about Maya archaeology. So he was the primary resource on the archaeology and ancient culture.
And then you were the primary resource on getting the language correct.
Actually, I was not. I was not involved during the production phase in Mexico. Now, it occurred to me while they were down there to contact them and sign on, and I might have been able to do it, but I was just not able to leave Austin for such a long period of time. Now, they had other
resources. Reading press reports, you were the primary in the post-production.
That's right. In the post-production, post-production
That's
phase.
What I meant, making sure it was all correct.
And I was working with a young Yucatec man named Nicolas Pott. And he lives in Los Angeles along with a couple of his brothers, and there's a lot of other Yucatec speakers living in L.A. as well. And he and I collaborated together. I would say that he and I were the team that gave them what they needed, their post-production support.
Now, when you're down in Mexico, you see the Mayan folks. They look just like the folks in the movie, because Mel went and got a lot of the actual people that are indigenous down there to be in the film.
He did.
The language they speak today, is that the same Mayan that was being spoken 500 years ago?
Pretty close. It depends where you are. But in Yucatan, the language that was spoken 500 years ago was probably no more different from modern Maya than the English that was spoken 500 years ago is from modern English. And it would differ primarily in terms of the vocabulary. There'd be a lot of vocabulary that we have in modern English, which would not have been in English of 500 years ago.
Like gun.
Well, or computer.
The Mayan wouldn't have a word for gun or sailing ship.
That's right. But they borrowed words they did have, and they adapted them to new things.
So it's kind of like English grows.
Yeah, exactly. Languages all grow the same way. There's a lot of universals across. It has to do with the way we're hardwired as human beings, the way in which language evolves.
How much evidence is there that there was trading between Asia and the Mayan culture? Because, when you're down there, a lot of the places, their archaeologists, tour guides will say, we have jade that's only in Asia. And, here at Tulum, the ships came in. Is that fanciful?
It's certainly not impossible. And there are people that are very interested in transoceanic contact. As far as regular trade back and forth, I don't think there's much evidence of it. But, I mean, that's a whole other story, too. It's just a when other ancient people made landfall in the Americas. And there certainly is some evidence that a Chinese expedition got to the west coast of the U.S. before Columbus got to the...
Well, we know Leif Erikson was there in 1100 and something.
So, yeah, I mean, there is this kind of definitely a lot of evidence of pre-Columbian contact. But as far as the Maya and other ancient people being regularly engaged in transoceanic trade, I don't think it's really, you know, we don't have any significant evidence of that, nor any evidence that they interbred with Chinese people. I mean, they have Mongolian-type features because the best evidence suggests that they came over across the Bering Strait exactly over thousands of years.
Well, they have the Mongolian spots, too, the children. That you know that you see in Asians the purple spots that CPS think the children have been beaten, but no, Asians get purple spots on their backs when they're babies.
You know,
I'm telling CPS workers out there, stop grabbing the Asian people and the Mexicans' kids because those are there until they're about five.
And now, and here's an interesting little sideline that might be worth chasing at some point. There are a lot of people of Germanic origin who also have Mongol spot and the shelf. Shovel-shaped incisors,
yeah,
and the epicanthic eye folds because of the invasions of the Mongol hordes that made contact with and conquered Germanic people. So, you know, we're all mixed up.
Well,
we've been mixed up forever.
Well, take Russia. You know, the Slavic folks, Asian.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, one point I wanted to make is that Mel Gibson deliberately collapsed time and cultures to create a backdrop. A very rich and sumptuous visual backdrop and cultural backdrop to tell his story. He did it on the scale of the warlike urbanites, and he did it down there on the scale of the peaceful hunter-gatherers. And both of those are characters that are larger than life. They've been written larger than life in order to create empathy with and interest in those people, to tell his story.
Final segment. I want to read through a translation in English and then to Mayan from the film. It's powerful stuff about fear being a sickness, which you've certainly conquered flying your airplanes and stunt flying. That was my favorite scene in the film. We'll be right back. Final segment with our guest. Stay with us.
People who use Cartabite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartabite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartabite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, in herbal formulas like Cartabite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at www.heartdrop.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
The statistics are heart-wrenching. According to the CWC, of the 43 million people who have served in the major wars, from the Revolutionary War to the Gulf War, 3 million never made it home alive. Most likely, each one of us can say we either knew someone who served or know a brave soul who is currently serving our country. Now there is a unique way to pay tribute to the courageous men and women who spend their lives protecting our freedom and to those who have lost their lives doing so. Davis Products is offering high-quality, solid-cast aluminum memorial markers for your American flag. Each memorial marker is specifically designed to represent one of 15 wars. All markers include a 3/8-inch pointed and threaded aluminum rod, painted and highlighted for an appearance that is unforgettable. What better way to pay homage to our enlisted loved ones? Davis Products memorial markers are only $9 a piece and can be ordered by calling 814-827-4946. That's 814-827-4946. Or visit davis-products.com. That's davis-products.com.
Are rising gas prices flattening your wallet? Try Royal Purple High Performance Motor Oil.
What? How's that?
Yes, independent tests by respected universities show Royal Purple reduces fuel consumption by as much as 5%. That means Royal Purple can deliver better gas mileage, for a fatter wallet. Go to royalpurple.com for details. That's Royal Purple, the high-performance motor oil that outperforms. Oil is oil. Don't kid yourself. Technology makes better oils possible, like Royal Purple. Royal Purple reduces friction and increases film strength. Go to royalpurple.com and you'll find independent test results from North Carolina and Oklahoma State. Not hype, just facts. What's in it for you? Superior protection, fewer oil changes, more horsepower, torque, and better gas mileage. Find Royal Purple at Napa, O'Reilly's, your local high-performance center, and royalpurple.com today.
Hey ladies, if you love to shop, then visit herbalhealer.com to browse through their online catalog. You'll find thousands of effective, alternative, and natural products for you and the whole family. Besides the amazing products you'll find, this shopping is guilt-free because you're investing in your health, and your health is priceless. While online, sign up to receive the Herbal Healer newsletter, which will keep you informed on the latest and greatest products and education. Did you know that Herbal Healer offers not only natural medicine, but also tension-relieving herbal teas, cookbooks, aromatherapy, products for pampering, and more great products to help you soothe and relax after a long day? Want to learn more for yourself and to help others in the future? Join the Herbal Healer Correspondence Program. You can work at your own pace from the comfort of your own home. This accredited, exciting program can help you gain skills and knowledge. Can you believe you can find all this at one stop? Herbalhealer.com, celebrating 18 years of dedication.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
Never had a worse enemy. You're locked into the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back. We've kind of gone down another path this week, getting into a little bit of history that illustrates what elites, what ideas can do, what the Romans did, what the Aztecs, what the Mayans were doing. This bloodlust, it comes up over and over again, and that's really the danger of an all-powerful state, because anybody's whim can then become the norm. And I really want to thank now, before the show ends, Barbara McLeod, PhD, anthropologist who worked on Apocalypto, for joining us. During the break we were talking, it's been more interesting than, frankly, on air. It's always that way, but this whole broadcast has been amazingly important and at the same time entertaining. In the film, big spikes with human heads and skulls on them, or I've been down to Chichen Itza, the ball playing court, hundreds of skulls carved into the sides. They say that the winners and the losers were killed. What's the truth? Are the skulls on poles real, the heads? Did they kill the winner or the loser? What's the truth?
Well, I think the evidence really strongly points to the fact that they killed the losers. The idea of killing the winners and people playing to win so that they can be nobly sacrificed is kind of a fascinating idea, but I don't really think it's very realistic. But nonetheless, there's a lot of evidence of human sacrifice at Chichen Itza, both sacrifice of ball players. You may have seen the scenes on the sides of the ball court where a ball player is kneeling and his head is being chopped off. In fact, his head has just been chopped off. And then the other ball player, the winner, is holding the decapitated head, and out of the cut neck spurt seven serpents and a vine. So there's a lot of real mystical, magical rebirth stuff going on there.
What about 2012? I mean, the nuts are getting ready to go crazy on that date. Oh, it's the end of the world, but you're able to actually read the real calendar. You can read the original language. What does it actually say?
Well, what I have access to, and I've actually been involved in deciphering it, I'm one of the people who deciphered this phrase, is the last time this came around, which was back in 3113 BC. And the cycle is roughly 5,200 years. It's closer to 5,129 years because the core unit is not 365, it's 360. Now, they had a solar year of 365 days, but what we're talking about is the great cycle of what they call the long count. It's their day tally. And in that phrase, for the last time this event happened, it says, "Will be changed the hearth at the mouth of the sky." And I think that What I write into that and read into that is that the sky was seen as a house, and the hearth is the core of culture within that house. And that's going to change. Now, they're not telling us a whole lot about what really happened there, but we get a lot of history from before that event, a lot of these monumental texts tell us about the actions of deities before this event took place. So they clearly believe that there was a before and after. And I see no reason to think there's not going to be a before and after in this situation.
So even if people believe in their religion today or have got some New Age concoction from it, it doesn't really say the planet blows up.
No, nothing like that. Nothing like that. In fact, where there are ancient Maya monuments that cast forward into our times and beyond, and they make it clear that they expect things to carry on. The only thing they really say about it, and again, I've been very much involved in deciphering this, is that they expect to be able to keep the gods happy.
How many of the professors and academics you work with are into this now and believe it?
Into what stuff? The 2012 stuff? The New Age stuff?
Yeah, I mean,
for the most part, everybody disbelieves it. But I think that I'm one of the few who's really explored it. I have tried to build a bridge between the straight academic world and the myth makers, the people who are millennialists who really want something to happen.
We're going to have you back before we run out of time. Go through that.
I would like to read something. This is actually from the script of Apocalypto, and it's one of the most powerful parts. I'm going to read it in native Yucatec Maya and translate it. This is the speech of Flint Sky to his son, Jaguar Paw, after they meet the terrified people in the forest. Teche kap el chahanatukul. You are troubled again. Le makop tek asho, bashtawilatio. Those people in the forest, what did you see on them? Sahki, fear. Tam kak asahki, deep, rotting fear. Latiob utsayatiob lelo tawila. They were infected by it, did you see? Le sakilo umpel kohanil. Fear is a sickness. Le lala kuyoko tikushtal. It will crawl into the soul. Le lelo tsokanuk askuntiku wets anankil akushtal. It has tainted your peace already. Tere matin chui sechu tialin wilechich sakhile. I did not raise you to see you with fear. Hosta pusika. Strike it from your heart. Matasik te chan kahalo. Do not bring it into the village. Kensas lake yank muchta yetele batabo tu kilich kashil akchibalon. At first light, we will gather with the elders at the sacred hill of our fathers. Telo tone yank paik pishano utialunu ton. There, we will call on our spirits to guide us.
That's a pretty language. How similar is it to some of the tribes that were in Central North America? Because it sounds just to my ear, somewhat similar in its cadence to some of the other Native American groups here in what is the U.S. today.
Well, there's really no strong evidence of affiliation with any Native North American groups, but there are some linguists who've attempted to create what they call macro families, in which they put some of the languages of the Northwest Coast, some of the languages of California that are now extinct with the Mayans. And there are a lot of other people that don't agree with that. And I have to kind of sit on the fence with that. Because
how old is Mesoamerica? Or how long? Because some say 30,000, 20,000, 12,000. I mean, from the evidence you've got, how many thousands of years ago did these Asian nomadic tribes come out of Russia down into what is Alaska today and then down into Chile?
Well, there are some people who claim it's as old as 50,000 or greater.
There could be two, three ice ages ago.
Based upon the types of tools that they find. I would take a somewhat more conservative view, but it's also territory that I don't command very well and say, well, 10,000 years.
Well, what do the majority of the, quote, experts say? The last one, 12,000, or even before that?
Probably in that range of 12,000.
It's amazing. It's so interesting. I mean, I wish I could go study stuff like this. And I tell you, to you, is that a pretty language? That was nice to the ears.
It's a beautiful language. I love this language. And I'm just absolutely delighted that people all over the planet are going to get to hear it. I think that's one of the sweetest things about this movie, is that it's going to expose people to the Mayan language and to the Maya people. And anybody who's really interested in finding out more about the Maya, if they really want the fair and balanced view, they're going to go get it. It's easy to get. There's just so many sources out there.
How would you say prison planet in Mayan?
Oh, my. Let me think about
that. Like jail and planet.
I ought to know how to say jail. I've known that in the past. Is it Kalom Che? Kalom Che? Kab. Prison planet.
So, just so I know when I listen to it later, how do you say?
Kalomche. It's like it's a tied up palisade, palisade earth.
Okay, so how do you say that and then company? .com.
I don't know that I can come up with that right now. Let's work on that for Thursday.
No, absolutely. Well, listen, if you want to come in the studio on Thursday down to my office where I do the weekday show, that's great. Or telephone is just as good. Whatever's good for you, but you're welcome.
Okay.
In closing, I wanted to just do you think the film is starting to win over some of the academics that at first were angry about it, or do you?
I haven't had enough opportunity to talk to them about it. You know, it's I only saw the final theater production a few days ago.
But you said when Gibson was here a few months ago, you saw it without sound.
It had sound.
Music.
It actually had a score. It had a score that was borrowed from some other source, but didn't have James Horner's score. And I saw it with David Stewart, who is a professor of art history here at University of Texas. And
was that back in October when Mel came to the Alamo Draft House?
Yeah, you saw that at that time too, didn't you?
No, I was trying to go, but then I had a family engagement I didn't get to. So I'm very
Well, I did see it then, and Dave Stewart and
I was saying I saw it again when it just came out there. Same place, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Dave Stewart and I talked about it for about 20 minutes afterwards. And we both agreed that we both really liked it, you know, that it just really, you know, I remember using the phrase, it kicked ass. It just really got me involved.
No, I thought it was a powerful film, total immersion. I felt like I was teleported there. Talking about getting past fear, you were afraid of flying, and now you're a stunt pilot.
That's right. And that's another whole story. Which is one of the most remarkable things that's ever happened to me. You know, I just decided that... I discovered I had a passion for flying that was buried underneath all that fear. But it's, you know, to tell that story properly would, you know.
But, you know, fear really is a sickness. I see.
It's a sickness, and it's also an illusion. It's an illusion.
Well, I mean, in my job, you just got to get past fear. Fear what people think about you first, and then physical fear. Well, Professor Barbara McLeod, Ph.D., worked big time on Apocalypto. We really want to thank you for coming in. This has been an amazing interview. We're going to put it up on the web at PrisonPlanet.tv. I want to thank you out there for watching and thank all of you out there for listening. Until next time, vaya con Dios.
It's no secret that Genesis Communications Network depends on listeners like you. Now you can do even more to hear Genesis shows in your area. Simply call your local radio stations and tell them about your favorite GCN program. It's easy. Log on to GCNlive.com or call us toll free, 877-807-4048. Make a difference. Call your local station and contact us through affiliate relations at GCNlive.com or call 877-807-4048. Call today.
Are your Federal Reserve notes looking for a safe haven? Mine found it in precious metals. Not paper promises, but actual gold in my possession. It is liquid, it is private, it owes no one, it cannot go bankrupt, and it maintains its purchasing power. Find your answer at Midas Resources. That's 1-800-686-2237. The answer is at 1-800-686-2237.